Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling. Like, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO Podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight I'm joined by Tyson, and Tyson has got an absolutely ripper UFO tale to tell us about. Tyson, welcome to the show, mate.
G'day, how you going?
I'm very good. Your email genuinely gave me chills, and you are one of the unique individuals who kind of pull the camera out at the right moment and capture the evidence as it's happening. So for those who are listening, Tyson's encounter is going to have some video evidence, which I'm going to include onto the website, if that's okay with you, Tyson.
Absolutely, yeah. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, cool. So, Tyson, tell us about this absolutely insane set of encounters.
All right. Well, it was about 12 months ago, February 21, and I was doing a lap of Australia, and my brother was doing a lap as well, and we decided to go spend Chrissy in Tasmania. We took our four-wheel drives down there, and well, COVID hit. We got stuck there, so we thought we'd pick up some work. Started working for this vineyard company, and we were building vineyards. And we ended up down in this little town called Campania, or Camp, I think that's how it's pronounced, on this property building a vineyard. And one day we knocked off work. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and putting the tools away in the trailer. And I've looked up to the east, and there's a bit of a hill just out on the northern side of the town, and this hill's about a kilometre away from us, and it's probably about a kilometre high, and I can see this big orb just moving through the sky on the northern side of the mountain, and I've pointed out to the rest of the blokes. I've gone, check that out. What do you reckon that is? And everyone sort of watched it for a moment and palmed it off as a helicopter, and I was adamant. I was thought to myself, that's not a helicopter, and looked at my brother, and he sort of thought the same thing and put the tools away, and this thing's gone around to the western side of the mountain, so we can't see out of our sight now. And we've had some tucker and a couple of beers, and I was just leaning on the bottom of my brother's cruiser, and this light's come out the southern side of the mountain from the western side, and I've gone, look, there's that bloody light again, and pulled my camera out, lent myself on the rhubarb, and just filmed away, snapped a few photos, and this light went up and down and moved around a bit. It was probably about 100 metres off of the land itself, off the top of the mountain, and then it started, and mind you, this is still in, like, on dusk. There's still plenty of daylight in the sky, and it started, like, strobing, like orbing, quite bright and then dull, and bright and dull, and sort of like it was moving around the mountain a little bit. We watched it for a while, and at one point we weren't sure if it was our eyes from staring at it for too long. It started emitting this almost like, if you could imagine what a sonar would look like, if you could see a sonar pulse, started emitting this blue sprinkling light over the mountain, like it was scanning the mountain. And we were sort of, me and my brother, sort of spinning out a little bit and filming away. And it's come around to the western side of, the eastern side of the mountain. And it started to look like it was landing on the side of the mountain, this light. And as it was doing that, and it's still strobing quite, the strobes had actually gotten faster and more, like, longer durations. And we filmed that. And as that's happening, to the south of us, almost directly above us, all the stars started, like, twinkling, like, quite flashing quite rapidly. And we were like, oh, that's what's going on here. We thought something was about to go down, and filmed away. I reckon we filmed probably about an hour and 45 minutes or something. It was now dark. My brother had enough, and he climbed into his swag, and I thought, oh, I better climb into my swag. And as I did, I left the canvas bit open and just watched the stars for a bit longer. And to the east of the paddock we're camping in, I could hear these dogs running around, and there's a bit of a stream in that paddock, and which I sussed out a little bit earlier to do a bit of fishing in a couple of days prior. And I could hear these dogs barking in this paddock, and I thought they'd bailed up some sheep or something, because I do a bit of hunting, and I know what a dog sounds like when it's bailed an animal. It gives this bit of quite a high-pitched yelp. And I could hear these dogs, and I thought, oh, the dogs have bailed up some sheep. And all of a sudden, I just heard this, like, a dog just yelping quite bad. And then all the other dogs just went dead silent. And I shat my pants, hey, and I flipped my canvas down, zipped her up, and went to sleep, and woke up in the morning. And I was a little bit shocked, and I had a bit of a yarn with the blokes in the morning I was working with, showing them the videos and stuff, and everyone sort of, like, shrugged it off a bit. Yeah, that was everyone. Yeah, everyone thought it was just a helicopter, but I kind of knew it definitely wasn't. And that was the first part of the story that happened a couple of weeks prior to the main event.
Yeah, that is such a fascinating encounter, because there's so many witnesses to it, and the fact that you've actually got this video footage of essentially everything that was happening, I think it's incredible, because, you know, you hear people who have encounters like yours, and people say, oh, well, why didn't you get it on video? And you did. And the footage is really, really incredible.
Oh, if I had a better camera, I reckon I could have got a better footage. It's still almost the classic UFO footage, you know, where it's a bit distorted and stuff. But most people aren't lucky enough to capture stuff on their cameras.
Yeah, definitely not. And the thing is with your footage is that you can see, like, the light. It does look like it lands on the mountain, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think what's the best part about it is, personally, is that I caught it with so much light pollution in the sky around it, so it was still in on that dusky part of the night. If it was nighttime, people would just go, oh, it's a satellite, or it's this or that. But because it's daytime, I think it's a little bit more credible.
How far away do you think that potential UFO was?
From the rhubarb of my brother's ute I was leaning on, I reckon it was directly a kilometre as a crow flies. And I have had a look on Google Maps a while ago just to pull it up, just to double check with myself. And I think it was a kilometre or 1,200 metres.
Wow, that's really close.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. what was going through your mind? Because for me, I would I would be thinking something's coming out of that. Like, surely something's coming out of that. And then you hear the dogs, you know, get attacked or, you know, get hurt by something that.
Oh, yeah, that's
scary.
That's what scared me. I wasn't really too spun out at first. I was sort of like, oh, some stuff's happening. I'm about to witness it. I'll capture it on camera. But then, you know, all the action sort of stopped. And then when I heard the dogs yelp, it was just after they yelped, there was this really eerie, just absolutely very still feeling. The atmosphere, everything was just paused, and it made me feel uncomfortable. So I locked myself in my swag and hope for the best.
That's the adult version of hiding under the blankets, I think.
yeah.
So, mate, what happened after this? Because you say there was the main event that happened after this. Because to me, I think that's incredible. You've got all this footage. You've got all these other witnesses with you. It's a shared encounter. Does it step up another notch? Does it?
It steps up a little bit more of a notch, yeah. So COVID's hit. It's hitting pretty hard now, and my brother's like, oh, I need a bounce. I need to get out of Tassie. We don't know how long this is going to go on for. I'm going to bail back to WA. So he jumped ship back to the mainland, and I decided to stay in Tassie and ride it out. And the bloke that we're working for, he decided to give me a rent one of his properties, so I wasn't just in my swag for the winter time in Tassie, which anyone in Tassie knows it gets bloody cold. And he's given me this property in Rowella, just out of Beaconsfield, just north of the Batman's Bridge. And it was just like pretty simple. It was mainly like where he stored all his machinery, a couple of big sheds, and just a single room, kitchen, bathroom, all the single bloke needs. And it was just a normal night. Cooked dinner, went to bed, and I was going to sleep, and I was quite falling into this quite a heavy sleep. And I was laying on my right hand side facing the window, and I felt my doonas flip up over onto my side of my body, and I pushed them back down. I didn't really think much of it. And then it happened a second time. And when it happened a second time, I sort of was like, well, this is weird. And I opened my eyes. And as I opened my eyes, I was facing the window. And in the window frame was a little alien. And it actually really scared me, because I felt like he had me under some kind of paralysis using telepathy. I could feel that he or she was controlling, like, you know, making me not move. And then I've drifted back into sleep, and I've woken up under the tree in the paddock. And when I woke up under the tree, it was like I was really, really intoxicated or under the influence of something, but my head was still very sober and strong, but I just felt really fuzzy and blurry. So I've gotten up from under this tree thinking, like anyone would, what the flip am I doing out in the paddock in my undies? And I've gotten up, and I'm walking back towards the glass sliding door, which is probably about 50 or 60 metres, and I'm halfway there. And then all of a sudden, these two people showed up in front of me. One went into the back glass sliding door, and the other one came right up into my personal space, right up so our chests were almost touching. And it was a friend and his partner, and they'd split up ages ago, and I don't know why they were there. And then there was a bit of like a fuzzy, almost like static, white, noisy sort of visual thing that happened, and I could see that it wasn't my friend. It was sort of like a cloak or like a disguise for these aliens. And I've sort of managed to like muscle past my friend towards the back door, and then from it must have been from the east, this this hexagon-shaped craft come over the top of the house, and it would have been only 15 metres above the house and into the backyard, which is just a paddock, and it's come over the top of me, and it was the shape of a 50-cent piece, real sharp edges on it, and it had a couple of big lights, and I don't know, there was some emissions coming out of it and stuff, and it actually broke in half down the guts, and one stayed where it was, and the other half sort of did like a 180-degree spin or a 90-degree spin and went up another 20 metres higher than it. And I was sort of like, am I dreaming? What's going on? This is heavy. And I've opened the back glass sliding door and stepped inside the house, and then I felt absolutely completely normal. And I thought that was a weird dream, and I wasn't quite sure. I'm looking out in the paddock, nothing's there, and I'm looking in the house, nothing's in the house. So I just climbed back on into bed, and as soon as I laid in my bed, I felt that really heavy feeling, and I was out again asleep, and then I gained consciousness, and I was sort of coming up out of my bed. I can't really remember this part very well, but I just remember my face being about 6 inches away from the ceiling, or away from a surface. And then I had gained consciousness again, and I was laying on a chrome bench top. And I'm just going to have a glass of water because I'm bloody yapping on. And I'm laying on this bench top, and there's one being standing. I'm laying on my side again, like I was initially when I felt the blankets getting flipped over. And this one being's, I felt like his job was to keep me in a state of paralysis. And there was two more standing behind me, and they were sort of in like a white room, pretty bright lights. And they were standing behind me, and they were doing something to my hamstrings. I don't know what they were doing, but they were doing something to my hamstrings and in my legs. And they, all three of them, were wearing white, like science trench coat looking outfits, but I could see that they were not human. And one of them had like an emblem or a marking on his shoulder that made me feel like he was the superior in the situation. And so I'm facing the one that's got me in a state of paralysis, and he's just very concentrated on making sure I don't move. And I can hear very faintly in my head, I can hear a bit of a conversation going on. And then all of a sudden, I hear the superior officer or whatever he is in the situation say, inside my head, say, this is my favorite part, or this is the best bit. And the one that had me in paralysis lost his concentration, which gave me enough time to just twist my head back to see what was going on. And that's when I could see that they were doing something to my hamstrings. There was two more standing there in coats, and the emblem on his shirt, I couldn't tell you what the emblem looked like. And he stabbed this big thing into my thigh, and then I woke up in my bed, and I was sweating and carrying on, and I thought, fuck me, that was full on. That was insane. It's probably about, I think it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I start work at 6, and there's no way I'm going back to sleep. So I got up, went to have a shower, and I stepped out of my bedroom into the kitchen, and I've looked down the hallway, or like looked through the kitchen, and the glass sliding door is ajar about a foot. And that's when my hair stood up on my shoulder, and I thought, fuck, that wasn't a dream, because I locked the doors every night living on my own. And I just sort of spun out, hopped in the shower, stood in the shower till the water went cold, and I left for work early and got to work, and I told one of my workmates about it when I got there, and he said, oh, tell us the full story tonight. Come over for a couple of beers and tell us the full story. So I went around there, had a couple of beers, and I had a couple too many, and ended up sleeping on Rick's couch. And And the same thing happened that night, apart from so I'm asleep on Rick's couch and I've just opened my eyes enough to squint, and there's this alien standing in the middle of the lounge room, and I've sat up as quick as I can just to have a proper look to see, am I spinning out or looking at, what am I looking at? And as I've done that, Rick's come into the lounge room and flicked the light on, and he's like, oh, sorry, bro, I'm just grabbing a glass of water. And I said, you weren't just fucking around with me then, you weren't, you know, standing in the lounge room. He's like, no, man, and I didn't say anything to him then about it, but I did later on at work. And in both cases, I can't pull it up because it's on my old phone, but I got my tape recorder out and I just recorded everything word for word while it was fresh in my head. I jotted down some drawings that morning as well. It was an absolute spin out.
What goes through your mind in a scenario like that? Because not only did it happen to you once, it happened to you the very next night, and it's not even at your own house. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Yeah, and it really, really had me a little bit concerned and worried, because I was spending a lot of my time in my swag, and I thought this could just happen anywhere, you know.
Yeah, and that's the scary part of it all, really, because, you know, it all kind of seemed to happen after you kind of had that UFO encounter, and, you know, it's like, well, this guy's seen us now, we might as well pick on him a bit.
Yeah, possibly. I didn't feel extremely threatened by them, but I did feel like there was a level of aggression that came with what happened, but I didn't feel like they really wanted to hurt me as such. I think they were just being a bit stern about whatever operations they had to go about.
Did you ever look at your legs after this? And I know this might be the most obvious question in the world, but, like, did you ever look for any marks or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, don't you worry. I still do. I had a look. I've always felt since then like my hamstrings have been really tight, so I do a lot of stretching most mornings and stuff like that. But there's no markings, there's no scars, there's no burning or anything. I did have another little run in. It would have been about 3 months later, maybe. I ended up in Victoria in my cousin's place. Once they opened the borders, I jumped back to the mainland, and I was staying at my cousin's place, and I was had a nap in the afternoon, and she'd come into the bedroom, and I sort of woke up a little bit, and the same fuzzy white staticky noise you'd imagine that you'd see on the telly was her, and then it just glitched, and that's when I went, nah, that's not her, it's one of them. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I had two oblong burns on either side of my wrist and on the, like, insides of my wrist, and I took a couple of snaps of them. I'll try to send them to you as well. And I spent the whole next day just thinking, did I touch something on my car when I was underneath it, or is there a way that I could have burnt them two identical oblong burns on either side of my wrist? And there's nothing there now, but that was the last of this encounter.
It is quite terrifying to think that these things have singled you out for whatever reason that may be. and they kind of have this almost intimate knowledge of things in your life. Like an example of that is them kind of putting those mask memories into your mind that you weren't seeing them. You were seeing your cousin and his ex-girlfriend of all people.
Yeah, that's what really puzzled me. And I sort of spent a bit of time thinking, was this all just a really heavy dream and my brain's just gone through the files and found some faces and put it to these things? But it all just seemed too intense and too real for it to be just to be a dream.
And, you know, there might be people who are listening to this right now saying that, hey, Tyson, you may have had a bout of sleep paralysis. And, you know, maybe that's what's just happened. And then maybe you, right after you had sleep paralysis, maybe you went sleepwalking. You know, people, what would you say to people like that? Would you say that, like, did those thoughts ever cross your mind? Or, you know,
definitely did. I spent my whole teenhood suffering from sleep paralysis. So I'd have three episodes a week, and it absolutely destroyed a lot of my life because I was so sleep deprived, because I was actually terrified to go to sleep. And what I experienced then was pretty heavy and pretty scary stuff, which I can go into another time. But this was definitely far from sleep paralysis. It was the feeling of that heavy paralysis state was definitely there, but there was too much. It just felt so physical, so real. I would disagree that it was sleep paralysis that I experienced.
Yeah, and you know what? You'd be the best person to know that, especially being someone who has kind of experienced that for a majority of your life, that,
yeah,
you know, you're going to be the kind of bloke who knows the difference between sleep paralysis and not.
Definitely.
You wake up in this field. You must have been spinning. You must have been just thinking, what the bloody hell has happened here?
Yeah, well, when I initially thought that I'd gotten on the piss at the pub down in Launceston, and because I'd done it a couple of times, I got on the piss and I'd driven back to Beaky, back up to Rowella, and just climb into bed drunk, and which is a bit naughty. But and I thought, because I woke up so I felt like I was intoxicated or under the influence of something, and just really heavy and quite fuzzy, I thought that I'd gotten on the piss and you know, maybe gone to take a piss under the tree or something before I'd gone to bed, and something had happened. And but then those two beings rocked up, and the craft above the house, and that's when I really started spinning out a bit. Yeah.
Did the creatures ever communicate with you when you're out on the yard?
So the one that came up to my chest, he disguised himself as my mate Nathan, as the other one went in the glass sliding door, and that was his partner at the time. And I think he was trying to stop me from going into the house, or I don't think there was any English words communicated. There was no conversation. I don't think so. I can't remember.
When you look at these scenarios, because I'm sure they kind of just play over in your mind over and over and over, you know, does it make you kind of question everything that's happened?
Yeah, sometimes, because these scenarios play, yeah, like I recap the story sometimes and I come back to it, and other times I'll forget little bits, and other little bits will pop up, or there'll be things in my day-to-day life that will trigger certain things, and I'll go memories of it. I have actually considered, I don't even know who or how or where to contact someone that's into it, but I've considered getting hypnotherapy or getting hypnotized and chuck a tape recorder on the table and actually see if they can dig into it and bring it up to the surface and see what actually the whole story, I think people get into that sort of stuff when it comes to these sort of events.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a question I was going to ask you, is if you've ever considered getting regression therapy, and you know, what do you think you would get from that? Like, do you think it's better knowing, or kind of just remaining in the abyss of the unknown?
Or I wouldn't mind knowing. It wouldn't worry me too much to know exactly what went down. But at the same time, I'm not too worried if I do or don't ever find out.
It's a good way to be, because a lot of these encounters can really bring on a lot of PTSD for a lot of people. And you might be one of the most open people I've spoken to about this, because I guarantee you not everyone's going to go down to the pub and talk about how they, you know, potentially got taken into a spacecraft by aliens or things like that. And you know, your support network even seems quite on board with it all. Like, I find that just so fascinating, and you know, quite rare. It's a really almost positive situation you found yourself in after these kind of, I would say, essentially terrifying encounters.
I definitely have a good support network amongst my friends and stuff. They sort of still to this day, they go, oh, yeah, you know, whatever. And I also don't just go tell anyone, any Tom, Dick and Harry down the pub, the story either. If it sort of comes up and a few people are yarning about some bizarre things, and I go, oh, all right, well, get yourself a pint, sit down, listen to this one. And no, yeah.
No, I think it's great, because, you know, so many people can be quite recluse when it comes to this, and it's really refreshing to, you know, speak to an individual like yourself who has had what I would say is like quite an intense set of, you know, paranormal and kind of UFO encounters here, and just be so positive about it. Because, you know, I speak to people every day about this type of stuff, and people see a UFO and they can go down an absolute rabbit hole of, you know, being obsessed with it, but you just kind of seem to take it in your stride.
Definitely. I think if it was the very first time I'd ever seen some bizarre stuff in the sky, I'd probably be quite shocked and probably, like you said, I'd probably have some PTSD from what went on. But I have seen some other stuff during when I was younger, and yeah, I think it's sort of built a little bit of, you know, a tolerance almost, or just an awareness of that these things are there and these things are happening around us. And you know, some people would give an arm and leg to see a bloody UFO, let alone experience what I did. And so I sort of just, you know, take it how it is, and I'm happy to share it with people and let them understand and what I went through or how I felt when I experienced it.
Yeah, I think it's a really good attitude that you've got to it. And, you know, I think we'll probably get you on the show again to talk about some of your very interesting other encounters, because, you know, there's some Yowie encounters, and the listeners would know, I'm a absolute sucker for a good Yowie story, so I'm always keen to get you on to talk about that again. But what do you think that you saw that night out on the, I guess, the yard?
I seen two in the yard, I seen two extraterrestrials, and they were very, if I could explain what they'd looked like, the typical grey alien that you would see depicted in movies and in illustrations, with the oblong head and the footy shaped eyes and real small slit for a mouth, These guys were more probably on the side of like a greeny, bluey colour, not really a grey colour. It was dark. I can't really say that what exact colour they were, but and they probably stood. They weren't tall. They were shorter than me. They were all shorter than me. I'm 175 centimetres, so I think that's like just shy of 6 foot or something. And so they were about my shoulder height.
Would you ever want to see him again?
I've never really thought about that. I don't think I'd have a say in it. I think if they were just going to show up, they'd show up. And I think I'd be probably more ready for it, and I'd know what's going on. I'd probably try and engage with them or communicate somehow with them other than sort of trying to just remove myself from the situation like I did that night. If it was to go down, it would be cool, I guess.
I would always ask, why me? Like, why'd you pick me? What makes me so special that there's, 7 billion people on this planet and I was the person that you chose to tweak my hamstrings? Could you at least fix up my buggered knees while you're at it?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know what I'd ask, but,
Well, Tyson, it has been an absolute treat talking to you, mate. I think the listeners are going to get a real thrill out of seeing the footage that you captured. I think it's fantastic. And the way that you documented everything that happened is really an honest credit to you, because not everyone kind of has the right state of mind to be so level-headed and document things in such a professional way, because you kind of re-ran through everything that happened to you. Your sketches, they're pretty great as well, from what you told me and from what I've seen, they're pretty much spot on. So, I think if anyone was to kind of create the rule book for how people should act when they have an encounter, I think they should listen to this episode and go, do the Tyson protocols.
Yeah. I felt was like, all right, this is some serious shit and I need to do this proper. And I just spat it out on my tape recorder and as best I could, played it back. And when I played it back, I realized I'd left quite a lot of stuff out. And then I wrote a few things down, got out my sketch pad, drew a few illustrations. And I actually messaged an old high school friend who's sort of into all this kind of stuff. And I just said, look, Sarah, just listen, hear me out. And I just dumped it all onto her, because I kind of was a little bit concerned that it was going to escalate to something greater and higher, and who knows, I might be a missing person on the bloody news. And so I just gave her all the information and gave her everything, and I just said, if I go missing, then you'll know what happened.
Yeah, that's actually quite a smart thing to do. I didn't even think of that kind of side of things of, becoming a missing person when you have these types of things going on, to touch base with someone as a point of reference, that's kind of genius.
Yeah, I did think it was a very wise move.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tyson, thank you so much for coming on the show, mate. You're fantastic to talk to. And yeah, like I said, I think the Tyson protocols will be something that I reference fairly often going forward with, alien encounters for guests from here on.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Yeah, likewise, Kate. It was nice chatting with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.